Around the 150th anniversary of the famine, a plethora of memorials and monuments were erected both here and abroad. They ranged from simple community-led memorials to complex public artworks costing millions of dollars. We'll be talking about some of them in a moment, but first let's hear this piece from the New York Famine Memorial in Manhattan, where Nicolene Greer met its creator, Brian Tull.
A small ruined stone cottage is not what you would expect to sit side by side with the New York Stock Exchange and the New World Trade Center. The Irish Hunger Memorial was created by artist Brian Tull. He visited Ireland, and it was on the West Coast that he found the inspiration for how the project would be realized.
Visited these deserted places like Slievemore on Achill Island, the deserted village there, and really was struck by the profound absence. There's a kind of quiet in these places that is overwhelmingly powerful. So I knew, having visited Slievemore, that a cabin or a house of that sort was essential to the project. And my partner, Brian Klein, is Irish in every direction. Actually, his family's from Mayo, and we were going through old photo albums with his mom, and there was a photograph of his grandmother in front of the family cottage. And I thought, well, that looks very much like the sort of house we've been looking for.
And so, a whole ruined cottage was transported from Attimas in Mayo to Battery Park City in New York and put back together by specially trained stonemasons.
The original fireplace here has no flue, but I guess one of the primary functions of the fire was to keep the thatch dry. There's an old Irish proverb that says, when the fire goes out, the roof caves in. And that became a very, very powerful statement during the famine era, because the idea of dying and not being properly buried was unimaginable. And so there are many, many accounts of people, the last person to survive within a family basically just closed the door and the fire would go out and the roof would in fact cover them and become their graves.
Like Rowan Gillespie's sculpture beside the IFSC in Dublin, the Irish Hunger Memorial sits beside the financial district of New York City.
This project is on the Hudson River in the middle of Lower Manhattan. It's quite an expensive piece of real estate. The building to the south of us is the New York Mercantile Exchange, where all of the commodities in the United States are traded. So the idea that they look out on an abandoned Irish field that's here to commemorate a traumatic event in terms of world hunger is an extraordinary thing.
As you come out of the cottage, you enter a small grassy area planted with plants like blackthorn and heath.
You can see that there are mounds here that, you know, referencing the potato drills. But there's no potatoes growing here. This is a place of absence. This is a place that saw tremendous loss. You know, you could come here on a day as cold and damp as this one, and we're the only two people standing here. And so you can feel the complete desolation and the absence of a human presence in this place. But there are days in the summertime, for example, when tour bus after tour bus comes past this place and there might be 200 people wandering about. And in that case, you can feel the pressure on this landscape. And so the population dwindles and grows and dwindles and grows, and I think, for me, that's the poetry of the place.
Artist Brian Tull there with Nicolene Greer at the New York Famine Memorial. Over the past decade, Emily Mark Fitzgerald of UCD's School of Art History and Cultural Policy has visited more than 140 famine memorials here and abroad to complete the first large-scale survey of these memorials, and that has come out in the form of the book commemorating the Irish Famine Memory and the Monument, published by Liverpool University Press. Emily, what did you discover, you must have discovered many different things, I suppose, at 140 famine memorials?
Well, I suppose the first thing was just how many there were. When I started this project, I suppose sometime about mid-2002, 2003, really started doing the site visits in larger quantities. And at the time, I think I had a working list of maybe around 30, 35 monuments that I was aware of that had been constructed since the 1990s. And so just over the years, that list grew and grew and grew. And of course, at the time, many of these projects, some of them are quite small, the very local kinds of commemorations across Ireland. They hadn't really been documented or looked at as an entire kind of corpus of work. And so for me, I think what was extraordinary was just to see the sheer diversity of monuments that had been constructed, but also the interconnections between them, because I suppose nowadays commemorative projects are so oftentimes connected with one another. People communicate over the internet, and there's actual physical connections as well between many of the commemorative projects. So being able to see all of this huge number now of projects that have been done over the last kind of 15 years or so in so many different countries, I think has been incredibly interesting.
And what are the most impressive ones?
Most impressive ones, I suppose it's how you define impressive. From my own point of view, you know, some of the large ones that have had the participation of public artists have been very interesting. The one that Brian Tull was just speaking about, the Irish Hunger Memorial, I think is one of the most ambitious, certainly, and interesting ones. The one in Sydney by Hoshin and Angela Valamanesh, I would think also is one of the most interesting. But equally, I think some of the projects that are in smaller communities, such as the one that's in Liverpool, one that's in Clonus and Monaghan, for example, that have also been, I think, very moving and sustained relationships with the famine past that they express. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a large public art project, I think, to really say something profound about our relationship to the famine.
And roughly speaking, of the 140 memorials that you've looked at, how many of them would be in Ireland? How many would be outside of Ireland?
There's around, I think, in certainly after Ireland, the United States would be the next in terms of the most monuments produced. That's probably not surprising. Mm. I think there's somewhere in the region of 45 or so that have been created in the US.
That many,
yeah. And others that are still in development. There's a project in San Francisco, for example, right now that's underway. And there's others as well. There's one that was unveiled in Iowa, in Davenport, Iowa, about a year ago. So it's very much still an evolving phenomenon, which was also surprising. In Ireland itself, I think I have records of around 50 or 60. So then the remaining would be in Canada, in Australia, in England, Scotland and Wales.
And I mean, do you see your research as relevant to the increased interest, or at least what I would hope would be increased interest in the history of the Irish diaspora?
Absolutely. I think it's an interesting project. It was an interesting project for me because the first phase of it, which was based around my PhD work, wrapped up in 2007. And I had written all these very interesting kinds of conclusions and had all these thoughts about what the famine meant in 2007. And then, of course, when the crash happened in 2008 and diaspora again came to the top of the agenda for the Irish government, all of this work as well started to, I think, have a new value and relevance. And the fact as well that the famine has really stayed at the top of interest for many people, both at sort of official and community levels, has been a really surprising development in some ways. But in others, I think it makes complete sense, given that we're in the decade of commemorations, etc.
Emily Mark Fitzgerald, thanks indeed for joining me this evening. Emily's book, Commemorating the Irish Famine, Memory and Monument, is published, or Memory and the Monument, rather, is published by Liverpool University Press. And many thanks to our readers this evening, Martina McGlynn, Angus McAnally and Jerry McCarthy. Next week, our lineup includes an insight into slavery in medieval Europe, and we'll also be hearing how Carlow Castle was virtually destroyed 200 years ago this month. Until then, from me, Miles Duncan, and producer Eddie Redmond, goodbye and thanks for listening.